Today is January the 22nd, 2025. I'm Hank Key, and welcome to the Personal Computer Show. Many of us are reminded of the importance of warmth and comfort. Unfortunately, not everyone has access to proper winter clothing. Donating winter coats helps those in need stay warm during the colder months. By donating your gently used or new winter coats, you contribute to the community support initiatives that aim to keep vulnerable populations safe and warm during the harsh winter conditions. Contact local charities and organizations that accept clothing donations. You can use search engines by typing in the keywords such as winter coat donation near me, or you can type in coat drive near me for more targeted results. Big Tech has been collecting and aggregating your personal data. Do you know how big tech companies and our government are using your personal data? We have been bringing computer news, hardware and software reviews, guest interviews, and news of user group meetings for the past 40-plus years. The Personal Computer Show is a 3-time winner of the prestigious National Computer Press Awards. Our only advocacies are consumerism and the First Amendment. I welcome you, the listeners, to provide feedback as to what you want to hear. Address your suggestions to Hank at pcradioshow.org. Our website is pcradioshow.org. We are heard each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network, PRN.live. That's PRN.live, streaming on the Internet. Podcasts of the program is available on PRN.live on the Internet. You can leave us a message with your questions or comment at hank@pcradioshow.org. Up to 90 days to resolve whether or not TikTok survives. Supreme Court says TikTok can be banned in the United States. Trump had posted that he would issue an executive order delaying TikTok ban by 75 days to work out a deal. The legal ability for such a move was included in the law. The Supreme Court ruled on Friday that a controversial ban on TikTok may take effect this past weekend, rejecting an appeal from the popular app's owners that claimed the ban violated the First Amendment. The court handed down an unsigned opinion, and there were no noted dissents. The decision, which followed warnings from the Biden administration that the app posed a grave national security threat because of its ties to China, will allow the ban to start Sunday, but there are a lot of lingering questions about how the ban would work in practice because there's no precedent for the U.S. government blocking a major social media platform. And how exactly the government would enforce it remains unclear. In its opinion, the Supreme Court acknowledged that for 170 million Americans, TikTok offers a distinctive and expansive outlet for expression, means of engagement, and source of community. But, the court said, Congress was focused on national security concerns, and that, the court said, was a deciding factor in how it weighed the case. Congress had determined that divestiture is necessary to address its well-supported national security concerns regarding TikTok data collection practices and relationship with foreign adversary, the court wrote. In the run-up to the ban's effective date, President Biden's administration signaled it would leave enforcement of the ban to Trump, who was inaugurated on Monday. Despite that, TikTok had said it may go dark when the ban takes effect. A Biden administration official told CNN on Thursday that the outgoing president plans to leave it to Trump to enforce any ban. Our position on this has been cleared. TikTok should continue to operate under American ownership, a Biden administration official said. Given the timing of when it goes into effect over holiday weekend, a day before inauguration, it will be up to the next administration to implement. The law gives the president the option to extend the ban by 90 days, but triggering the extension requires evidence that parties working on purchasing have made significant progress, including binding legal agreements for such a deal. And TikTok's parent company, ByteDance, hasn't publicly updated its stance that the app is not for sale. TikTok went dark Saturday night, shortly before legislation banning the app went into effect on Sunday. A little more than 12 hours after it shut down, TikTok released a statement that they were restoring service and some users were able to access the app again. TikTok remains as app works on restoring service. In a little more than just 12 hours since the app went dark, TikTok was being restored in the United States, the platform said in a statement on Sunday afternoon. In agreement with our service providers, TikTok is in the process of restoring service. The TikTok Policy X account posted on Sunday, "We thank President Trump for providing the necessary clarity and assurance to our service providers that they will face no penalties, providing TikTok to over 170 million Americans and allowing over 7 million small businesses to thrive. It's a strong stand for the First Amendment and against arbitrary censorship. We will work with President Trump on a long-term solution that keeps TikTok in the United States." TikTok restored service on Sunday after President-elect Donald Trump said he would issue an executive order to pause the ban on the wildly popular app. On Saturday night, TikTok shut down the operations in anticipation of a ban taking effect on Sunday, but on Sunday afternoon it began a comeback. "We thank President Trump for providing the necessary clarity and assurance to our service providers that they will face no penalties." Providing TikTok to over 170 million Americans, the company wrote on social media. Early on Sunday, Trump had posted that he would issue an executive order delaying TikTok ban by 90 days. The legal ability for such a move was included in the law. However, Trump said his plan included at least a partial sale of TikTok assets to U.S. interests, something TikTok owner ByteDance has rejected before. "I would like the United States to have a 50% ownership position in a joint venture," the incoming president wrote on social media. "By doing this, we save TikTok, keep it in good hands, and allow it to stay up." ByteDance did not immediately respond to Trump's proposed plan. However, previous efforts to sell the company to an American corporation have failed, and ByteDance has said has no plans to sell TikTok. Hours before the ban was set to take effect, TikTok blocked people from using its app on Saturday night, posting a message that read, "We're working to restore our service in the United States as soon as possible." A few hours later, it updated a message to include, "We are fortunate that President Trump has indicated he will work with us on a solution to reinstate TikTok once he takes office." Trump was sworn in this past Monday. In the past, Trump has gone back and forth on TikTok ban during his political career. In June of 2020, he said he was considering a ban, and in August of 2020, he issued a vague executive order about the app. But after President Biden signed the actual ban, which passed Congress with bipartisan support, into law in April of 2024, Trump started to argue that he would save TikTok if elected. "Without U.S. approval, there is no TikTok," Trump wrote on Sunday morning. "With our approval, it is worth hundreds of billions of dollars, maybe trillions." TikTok's sudden shutdown Saturday night came as a surprise to many. Tech experts said the so-called TikTok ban law did not actually prevent the app from functioning in the United States, but instead banned it from application stores. TikTok was indeed removed from Apple's App Store and Google's Play Store, so it can no longer be downloaded through major channels. Scrolling Twitter because TikTok is gone, but every tweet is about TikTok, one social media user observed after the ban. U.S. politicians began considering a TikTok ban in 2019 when the app first exploded in popularity among younger users. Both Republicans and Democrats said they were concerned about the company's Chinese ownership and requirements under Chinese law to turn over user data if the government asked for it. Various efforts to limit TikTok and the Chinese government's access to American user data were undertaken in 2020 and 2021. However, nothing fundamentally changed about the situation, leading to the TikTok ban that was passed in April of last year. "We will work with President Trump on a long-term solution that keeps TikTok in the United States," the company wrote this past Sunday. We'll see what happens while the clock is ticking. PC sales are rising once again. PC sales are up 3.8% compared to last year. Global PC shipments rose to 255.5 million in 2024, up 3.8% year over year. Strong Christmas sales and discounts saw a 4.6% rise in quarter four of 2024. Lenovo accounts for 24.2% of the market. The final figures for 2024 are in, and it's good news for the PC market, which saw encouraging growth during the year. The latest data of 255.5 million PCs, including desktops and laptops, were shipped in 2024, up from 246 million in 2023, a 3.8% year-over-year growth. Leading the way was Lenovo, which maintained its near-quarter market share of 24.2%, up from 24%. Of the 255.5 million PCs shipped in 2024, 61.9 million were Lenovo models. HP, with a market share of 20.7%, followed closely with 53 million units shipped. Dell, Apple, and Asus rounded up the top five with market shares of 15.3%, 8.9%, and 7.2% respectively. The 3.8% year-over-year growth highlights the stronger fourth quarter growth of 4.6% could be a positive sign of things to come. This was attributed to strong discounting by vendors and retailers during the holiday season and the increased take-up of buy now, pay later schemes. The final 3 months of 2024 represented the fifth consecutive quarter of growth following seven prior quarters of the market shrinking. Quarterly PC shipments are still nowhere near the levels they reached in 2020 and 2021, in some cases exceeding 90 million. The most recent quarter saw 67.5 million PCs shipped. The PC market could be set for accelerating growth. Increased adoption of AI-capable PCs and the looming Windows 10 end of service are driving commercial and personal customers to upgrade the devices this coming year. The market now anticipates AI PCs will account for 35% of worldwide shipments this year. In the third quarter of 2024, they had a 20% market share. GM agrees to five-year ban on selling drivers' location data. U.S. automaker General Motors and its subsidiary, OnStar, agreed not to disclose sensitive vehicle, geolocation, and driver behavior data to consumer reporting agencies for 5 years, the U.S. Federal Trade Commission said last Thursday. The agency enabled the largest U.S. automaker to collect, use, and sell drivers' precise geolocation data and driving behavior information from millions of vehicles, which can be used to set insurance rates without notifying customers and obtaining consent. The vehicles automatically collect data on hard braking, late-night driving, and speeding. That data was sold to consumer reporting agencies without permission from drivers. The agencies use the data to compile reports that insurance companies then sometimes use to deny insurance and in some cases raise rates. GM said in a statement that it had ended its Smart Driver program last year. It had designed the program hoping to promote safe driving by analyzing and giving drivers feedback on their driving habits. General Motors said, "We are more committed than ever to making our policies and controls clear and accessible as we continue to evolve the driving experience for our customers." The company must also obtain driver consent to collect data and allow them to delete or limit data as part of the settlement. The case is one of the several Democratic-led FTC, that's the Federal Trade Commission, is releasing ahead of President-elect Donald Trump's inauguration, which occurred this past Monday. The FTC's two Republican commissioners did not vote. U.S. Senators Ron Wyden, a Democrat, praised the settlement to protect Americans' privacy against automakers who sold detailed location data to insurance companies. Well, this begs the question, does this mean that 5 years is the benchmark when personal data is protected? After that, your personal data is no longer confidential? Researchers make major breakthrough in developing next-gen replacement for lithium-ion batteries. Magnesium may now be ready to enter the battery sector, thanks to experts at Canada's University of Waterloo. An effective cathode is the next missing element on Waterloo's list to take the tech to the next level, according to a school news release. The experts stated that magnesium battery findings were first shared in a research paper in 2000, but the element couldn't provide the same voltage as lithium, and the latter metal became the prominent one used in battery chemistry. Scientists worldwide continue to pursue batteries that use cheaper materials, are safe, and are high-performing. Potassium, sodium, and iron are among elements being tinkered with in the labs. Magnesium is more abundant and less expensive than lithium. Its ions have doubled the electrons compared to lithium, potentially providing for more energy density or storage capacity per pound, according to Waterloo and government experts at the Argonne National Laboratory. Argonne added slow charge times and technical challenges during cycling to the list of cons. For its part, lithium packs are reliable, cleaner energy sources, especially when replacing fossil-burning cars. But it's a tough-to-harvest element with an environmental cost documented by Euronews, in which water use and contamination are among concerns highlighted as fallout from the colorful brine pits often associated with lithium extraction sites. Magnesium batteries are potentially advantageous because they have a more robust supply chain and are more sustainable to engineer, and raw material costs may be less than the state-of-art lithium-ion batteries. And now it seems Waterloo team may have solved the voltage conundrum with an electrolyte that enables a highly efficient magnesium anode. The coin cell prototype registered 3 volts, a big increase from the less than 1 volt mark previously reached. For reference, an AA battery provides a 1.5 volts, according to Waterloo. The electrolyte we develop allows us to deposit magnesium foils with extremely high efficiency, and it is stable to a higher voltage than successfully tested before. Postdoctoral fellow Chang Li said in the lab summary, "All we need now is the right cathode to bring it all together." When batteries cycle, ions move between the anode and cathode through the electrolyte. Waterloo's version is non-corrosive and non-flammable, while addresses safety concerns associated with lithium packs. While rare, lithium battery fires can be explosive and calamitous, the National Fire Prevention Association noted in a fact sheet. Addressing battery costs and safety is important as our transportation system continues to transition to electric rides. The International Energy Agency reported that nearly one-fifth of the vehicles sold in 2023 were electric vehicles, a 35% increase from the prior year. Each EV that replaces a gas guzzler prevents thousands of pounds of planet-warming air pollution a year. That's according to the government's data. A one-time tax break of up to $7,500 and recurring fuel savings worth around $1,500 a year are big boons for motorists to switch. The Waterloo team has some work to do before magnesium packs can reliably power EVs, but they think their findings are scalable. Presenting the IT Pro Series with Benjamin Rockwell.
This is Benjamin Rockwell, and now it's time to get down to business. This is where we talk about computers, the workplace, IT professionals and some of the things that come along with all of that. I want to take you back in time, and I'm going to tell you a story first in regards to this topic, which we'll cover over the course of the next couple weeks. This week, I want to kind of introduce my experience with this. I'm going to start it off with saying, hello, my name's Benjamin, and I burned out. Yeah, this is not a 12-step program, and I'm not going to pretend like it is, but I am going to go back in time to my late 20s, and I was working at a company, and in that company, I did exactly that. I burned out. I was putting in 80-plus hours a week and was really just not getting any time to myself. And we're talking, I would work Monday through Friday. I would start off the day by getting in the car before 6 o'clock in the morning, arriving at 7 before anybody got into the office. And I would work through the entire day, missing break times, lunch times, bonding times, you know, the water cooler gossip and all of that. And I was managing a team of 6 and still just under the gun, just really facing a lot of problems with a lot of different things. I was also going in, I'd get home at about 10 or 11 and then turn around and do that again. Occasionally I might get home a little bit earlier, but that would be more of an exception rather than the rule. I would go in on Saturdays for 8 to 10 hours. I'd work Sundays for another 8 hours, and I wasn't getting any days off. Oddly enough, my boss kept coming to me and saying, hey, you need to get more work done. We've got this project. We've got that project. We've got all of these different things that you've got to get done right away. Along the way, while I was working for the company, I broke my clavicle, and I wound up not able to take more than, actually I didn't take any time off because I just worked from home for a matter of a couple of days, to just get past that. I couldn't drive because of the pain meds I was on for the first few days. Then I decided to brave through it. Yes, this is not really an ideal situation. This is distinctly burning out. You know, you start putting in that roughly 90 hours a week, and eventually something is going to break. In my case, it was really rough. I want you to imagine your energy like the battery of a smartphone. So you charge it up and everything runs smoothly. But if your smartphone goes all the way on down, it gets down to that last 20%, that last 10%, you put it into low power mode. And on some of the smartphones, it automatically does that. It's trying to preserve what little you have. If your body is always running on low power mode and you are ignoring the warning signs, you're just driving through all of this, burnout is going to be around the corner. This is a problem that exists throughout the IT industry. We do hear regularly of people who burn out in IT, and they will move forward. This is something that for years they call it a young person's game, because that's what happens. The folks that work for companies that, you know, I hear of these 20-year-olds and 25-year-olds, and they dash off and they go to work for Microsoft, they go to work for Blizzard or whoever else it is that they go to work for, and they barrel on through and they push hard. And this extends to Google, this extends to Meta, this extends across the industry. All of the big names, they're looking for all kinds of different results, and they don't want the results today. They don't want them yesterday. They want them a year ago. They are pushing hard for those results, and they have little care in the industry for that. And there are companies out there. Don't get me wrong. There are plenty of companies out there that look for work-life balance, that work for all kinds of different efforts to make sure that you are healthy all the way along, both physically and mentally. And that is a struggle for many people to find. And that is unfortunate. And that's because a lot of this industry we're talking technology, and we're talking about technology that is on a growth path that is going through the roof. And along with that, there's a problem with companies finding folks who are going to, work those 14, 16-hour days on a regular basis. They're paying heavily for it, and people see those dollar signs, and they think, hey, I'm going to go for those dollar signs. And I'm going to do great, and I'm going to be able to do this till I retire, and I'm going to be a gazillionaire. And that doesn't really follow through. It doesn't pan out very well as they burn out after 2 years, 3 years, maybe four. Most of them go on. They find another place later, hoping to find a little bit of balance. Does it come to them? I don't know. It's worked out okay for me since then. But it took a lot, and I've had to keep an eye on what are the common signs of burnout, how do you deal with it, how do you balance things, can you prevent it, and all of that. And that's what I'm going to talk about in the coming weeks. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. Back to you, Hank.
Thank you, Benjamin. There's a new way to reset your Chromebook. When it comes to resetting your Chromebook, there are now two primary options: safety reset and factory reset, which is also known as power wash. Chrome OS 131 is rolling out now to Chromebooks with a few useful improvements. Namely, it introduces the new safety reset feature, which feels like a light version of a factory reset. The safety reset is ideal for situations where you are experiencing software issues but want to keep your data intact. It acts like a light reset, allowing you to resolve problems without a complete wipe. The safety reset feature lets users restore their Chrome OS device to a previous good condition without completing a factory reset, also known as a power wash. The safety reset clears settings, shortcuts, extensions, cookies, and temporary site data, but it keeps your bookmarks, browsing history, and saved passwords. This is similar to other safety features like System Restore with Windows. The difference is that System Restore will bring the PC back to a specific save point. The safety reset essentially cleans up your browser and keeps only a few things. Instead of forgetting everything that happened until a certain point, it targets the areas that tend to give computers issues while browsing. This can be a lifesaver for those who keep getting issues even after clearing their browser cookies. There's also new flash notifications that make it easier for people to notice when they get a new alert. The Chrome team mentioned that the screen will flash to help users who have trouble hearing or use a screen magnifier. Use the safety reset for minor issues while retaining your data, and opt for the factory reset when you need a complete wipe of your device. Each method serves its purpose depending on the situation you are facing with your Chromebook. You can initiate the safety reset. You sign out. You press and hold the following keys simultaneously. Pressing Control plus Shift plus Search plus R on your keyboard. This will bring up the safety reset dialog box directly. A factory reset or power wash is a more comprehensive solution that completely erases all user data and settings, restoring the Chromebook to its original factory state. This process will delete all local files, including those in the downloads folder, and reset all settings, apps, and configurations. Factory reset is best suited for situations where you want to sell or give away your Chromebook, or if you are facing severe issues that cannot be resolved through other means. It ensures that all personal data is removed and the device is clean. To initiate the factory reset, you sign out, you press and hold the following keys simultaneously. Control plus Alt plus Shift plus R. This will open the reset dialog. As always, back up your system before resetting it. Critical hidden email danger confirmed for Gmail and Outlook users. Security researchers have issued a warning about VIP Keylogger and Objectivity Stealer malware. By the way, Objectivity is spelled OBJ3CTIVITY. Objectivity Stealer malware, which are not as easy to spot as they are well hidden within your email messages, with Gmail and Outlook being the biggest email platforms. Users are warned that they should stay particularly alert for these attacks. The latest HP Wolf Security Threat Insights report has issued a warning regarding a critical malware threat being delivered by email remaining hidden inside images. Not just the one malware threat, in fact, but two. Security researchers have reported how they caught malware campaigns spreading the VIP Keylogger and Objectivity Stealer hacking threats, both using the same initial exploit techniques, hiding malicious code in images. VIP Keylogger can record keystrokes and exfiltrate credentials from a number of sources, including apps and clipboard data. Objectivity Stealer is also, as the name suggests, an information stealer and targets both account credentials and credit card data. By hiding malicious code in images and hosting them on legitimate websites, the attackers were more likely to bypass network security like web proxies that rely on reputation checks. The tactics observed in the report demonstrate that threat actors are repurposing and stitching together attack components to improve the efficiency of their campaigns. In what the HP Wolf researchers called large malware campaigns spreading the VIP Keylogger threat, emails were sent that posed as invoices and purchase orders to victims, and the investigation uncovered multiple malicious images, with the most accessed one having been viewed 29,000 times. Objectivity Stealer, meanwhile, was sent using archive files pertaining to be requests for quotations. These would, if activated, download an image from a remote server containing the malicious code itself. Microsoft rebrands from Microsoft 365 Office to Microsoft 365 Copilot. The change includes a logo switch from a blue hexagon to a Copilot logo with an M365 tag. Microsoft is focusing on the AI initiative, integrating Copilot into the base plan. Back in December, Microsoft gave out a small warning. It stated that it planned to rebrand its entire productivity line from Microsoft 365 Office to Microsoft 365 Copilot, and people didn't really gel with the idea. Well, seems Microsoft didn't really care, as it has given the green light to begin rebranding everyone's apps to a more Copilot-focused brand. As spotted by Windows Latest, your Office apps are now going to look a lot more Copilot in the coming days. This includes changing the Microsoft 365 Office logo from the blue hexagon to the Copilot logo with a small M365 tag at the bottom right. Longtime fans of Microsoft will know that Office has gone through a few name changes already, so why is it going through yet another one? Well, it's no secret that Microsoft is going all in on its AI initiative. In fact, Microsoft 365 users recently learned that the subscription price is going to go up for the first time in 13 years, purely because Microsoft is adding Copilot integration into the base plan instead of relying on people subscribing to Copilot Pro. That's a very high chance that we're only just scratching the surface with this rebrand. After all, given how the company changed the logo to match Copilot's, there's a good chance it will want people to use the suite as a Copilot-powered app first and a productivity app second. The question is, will the people warm up to the idea of Office putting the AI tools ahead of the basic functionality? We can't say for sure right now, but we can say that if it doesn't pan out, Microsoft will have a lot of rebranding to do. Microsoft's quest for implementing Copilot everywhere continues. Of course, people who have kept a close eye on Microsoft know about its recent push to add its AI assistant to everything. The rollout began in January of 2024 when Microsoft announced it was renaming its mobile browser to Microsoft Edge AI Browser. Fast forward a year, and we've seen the release of dedicated Copilot Plus PCs, partnerships with AI companies, and even a new Copilot key on keyboards and laptops. So now that Copilot has been integrated into every Microsoft app, what does a company do now? Well, if CES 2025 is any hint of anything, this year will be the year Microsoft brings Copilot to third-party services. Proof of this emerged when LG and Samsung agreed to add Copilot to their smart TVs, and given how hard Microsoft is pushing its AI tool, it's highly likely that this won't be the last time we see it arrive outside of Microsoft's product range. We'll just have to wait and see if the gamble pays off or if we're headed for a Cortana 2.0. Presenting Technology Chatter with Benjamin Rockwell and Marty Winston.
Marty Winston joins me now, and we are currently on a Skype meeting. Yeah, we're using Skype. I had to double check. And it's kind of funny that we're talking about that because you've got a bunch of stats that you've been gathering.
I've been doing a lot of homework about meetings, and I was amazed to find 2 years, 2023 and 2024, reports from Microsoft called Work Trend Index Annual Report, for example. In the most recent one, and it's not all about meetings. Most of it reads like a Medicare Advantage commercial for AI.
So,
I went in and plucked some gems from 2024, for example, and I quote, meetings and after-hours work are holding steady at their post-pandemic highs, haven't reduced, and the workday still skews toward communication. In the Microsoft 365 apps, users spend 60% of their time on emails, chats, and meetings, and only 40% in creation apps.
Okay. I would say that feels true to me. Yeah. That's a lot of my experience.
Yeah, but it's a lot less time to be creative, and sometimes creative is more fulfilling.
Sure.
From 2023, with a balance of work hours spent communicating, 68% of people say they don't have enough uninterrupted focus time during the workday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We set aside where I work right now. We are setting aside roughly, we're setting aside the Friday afternoons for focusing. No meetings are allowed there. And there are a few other scattered times throughout the week and the month that vary where they say, nope, no meetings here, no meetings there. I actually do work instead of talking to everybody.
I love taboos.
So that's usually when we do the water cooler gossip. I'm totally kidding. I couldn't resist, though.
People report that the number one productivity disruptor is inefficient meetings, followed closely by having too many meetings at number three. Okay. Most people say it's difficult to brainstorm in a virtual meeting, that's 58%, or catch up if they joined a meeting late, that's 57%.
Okay.
And that next steps at the end of a meeting are unclear, 55%. And that it's hard to summarize what happens, 56%. And since February 2020, people are in three times more Teams meetings and calls per week, 192% more. The data shows a clear need to make meetings better.
And I'm thinking through some of those numbers. So Brainstorming, yeah, I'd agree with that one. If I'm late to a meeting, I do struggle with some catching up. Depending on what the meeting's for, some of it's pretty wild. Let's see here. Next steps, I think we're pretty good there where I'm at. Summarizing, we do have a problem. We're chasing after an AI solution to listen to the meeting and summarize it up for us. And it's interesting.
A summary of rotten content is still a rotten summary.
Oh, dear.
Let's try this one. Today, only 1 in 3 people, 35%, think they would be missed in the majority of their meetings.
I lead over half of the meetings that I'm in.
Do you bring too many people to the table?
I try to be careful about how many people I invite. Sometimes I just can't avoid it, though.
And for everyone else in your company, for the meetings they have, are they just as careful?
No. being brutally honest, nobody knows where I work, so I think I'm safe with saying that one.
careless is contagious.
Yes, yeah, okay.
Now, this next important concept is a long item, so here we go. We're all carrying digital debt. The inflow of data, emails, meetings, and notifications has outpaced humans' ability to process it all. And the pace of work is only intensifying. Everything feels important, so we spend our workdays trying to get out of the red. Nearly 2 in 3 people, 64%, say they struggle with having the time and energy to do their job. And those people are 3.5 times more likely to also struggle with innovation and strategic thinking. And nearly 2 in 3 leaders, 60%, are already feeling the effects, saying that a lack of innovation or breakthrough ideas on their teams is a concern. There are only so many minutes in the day, and every minute we spend managing the digital debt is a minute not spent on the creative work that leads to innovation. In a world where creativity is the new productivity, digital debt is more than an inconvenience. It's impacting business.
That is, I would definitely say that, yeah.
Let me hit these last three all at once. The heaviest meeting users, top 25%, spend 7.5 hours a week in meetings. The data reveals an urgent need to make meetings more effective. People report inefficient meetings as their number one productivity disruptor, and only 35% of people say they would be missed by colleagues in a majority of their meetings if they couldn't join.
Wow. There's a lot of resistance to the meetings. As I'm listening here, there's a lot of people who are feeling discouraged, I'm sure, about meetings.
We've got to find a way to fix this.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. This is a problem that is only going to get worse until we start fixing it. Marty, wait, you just say, ask me about magnets. What's going on here?
Oh, man. You know, it's really amazing how many people, even product designers, don't understand magnetism. They don't even understand animal magnetism. They think it means you can stick your cat on a fridge. But this...
Mine crawls on top of the fridge all the time, but okay, all right.
Yeah, but never sticks in one place. You'll notice that
No, she doesn't.
And they may stick to a bowl full of food, but that's catnip.
Yes.
Anyway, this isn't a game of cat and mouse. More like cat... No, fat and gauss.
Okay,
because I'd better explain it. A while back, when I first got my new Google Pixel 9 Pro XL phone, you'll remember. Yeah. I got in a case from a company that isn't Otter.
Okay, and, yes.
Right? You know the old saying, when it comes to cases, there's OtterBox and then there's everybody else.
Uh-huh.
Well, that company loved the trendy static magnets that let you stick your phone onto other magnets to hold it. And
sure, yeah.
Right? They built their case with all of that as an apparent priority.
Mm-hmm. Well, I seem to recall it also meant because of the thickness of the case, you couldn't charge it using Qi technology?
Well, you are correct, sir.
Okay. All right. Go on. Go on. Well, it did work for the recesses of my mind here.
No, well, there's a lot of recesses because it's a big mind.
Yes. Thank you.
Yes. It's the best I could do. Ladies and gentlemen, your car's listening to this. Stop laughing. Anyway, it was good for letting you stick your phone onto another magnet to hold it. But, you know, I needed it. Well, at least I wanted a case that I could magnetically charge, as you said.
Yeah, right.
Well, that takes a changing magnetic field. For those of you who want to visualize this as an animation, instead of going, the magnetic field has to go, wooba, 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 wooba.
Okay.
At much higher speeds than illustrated here. That changing magnetic field is the basis of radio and so many other things. You know, that kind of changing magnetic field makes motors move, lets generators generate, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And that other case was very picky about ever letting that happen, even if you got it precisely within a millimeter or 2 millimeters precisely positioned.
Yeah.
It would show a charge for about 1 second and then stop.
Frustrating.
Oh, at least. Yes. Yes. Now, look, that other case didn't bother putting a flap over the USB connector, which is just as well because you were always plugging a charging cord in there.
Yeah.
Anyway, enough of the other case. I asked Otter for a defender and they came through.
Mm-hmm.
Let me say, no matter how many times I've dropped any of my phones, I have never had a case or a screen crack when the phone was in an OtterBox Defender case.
Yeah, OtterBox makes some very nice cases. My work phone. I have two phones. I've got my personal phone and I've got a work phone. And the work phone is in an OtterBox. And it will take whatever beating I give it, I'm sure.
Well, don't spank it and don't throw it down, but you're right. It's going to come back no matter what.
Yeah.
So the OtterBox, by the way, does have that little rubber flap over the USB-C port to keep water from going in that way. Mm-hmm. And also, let me say, it does let me cordlessly recharge for as long as I want to keep it on the charger.
Yes, it does. Yeah.
And that's my story, and I'm sticking to it, of the OtterBox Defender that to this moment is going to be the permanent wrap for my new phone.
I understand completely. So you've dealt with OtterBoxes for how long? Since they first came out, probably.
Dawn of time, when the Otter was barely a pup. I was right. You know, mentioning that USB-C port made me think of something else. I'm getting some boards in to test and figure out, and they don't always come with specs.
Okay, yeah.
And I reached into my toolkit, and I brought out my Klein Tools multimeter for USB power feeds. Whoop, just hit the floor. Didn't need the OtterBox.
Yes, it did. I was thinking the same thing. So what all does that do?
Well, what it told me was the board I was testing was normal 5 volts and pretty close to that USB power and drawing just under 500 milliamps.
Okay.
Now, that had some consequence because I had designed a product that was delivering 12 volts.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, because a part ended up lying to me and I had to replace it, I needed 5.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you the story a little later. I'll tell everybody the story. We found a way to move from analog to a microcontroller for 35 cents.
Mm-hmm.
And that meant I had to add 5 volts, and I had no idea how much this took, and it would have made a $14 difference in my cost if it took more than about an amp, took less than half. Hurrah. And thank you, Klein Tools. Thank you, OtterBox. Thank you, Benjamin.
Very cool. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That's Marty Winston. Back to you, Hank.
Thank you, Benjamin, and thank you, Marty. Public service announcements. Computer club meetings in the New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut tri-state region. Log on to the club website for more information on remote meeting ID. The Brookdale Computer Users Group meets Thursday, January the 23rd. Meeting time is 6:45 p.m. Online virtual meeting via Zoom, and their website is bcug.com. The Amateur Computer Group of New Jersey meets Friday, February the 7th. Meeting time is 8 p.m. Online virtual meeting via Jitsi. Website is acgnj.org. Tech Ed Connect meets Tuesday, February the 11th. Meeting time is 7 p.m. It is a hybrid meeting. The meeting is at the Scarsdale Public Library at 54 Olmsted Road in Scarsdale, New York, and online virtual meeting via Zoom. Website is wpcug.org. The King's Bite Computer Club meets Tuesday, February the 11th. Meeting time is 7 p.m., and they meet at the Park Plaza Restaurant, located at 220 Cadman Plaza West in Brooklyn. Phone number is 347-278-7320 for more information or to confirm meeting. The New York Amateur Computer Club meets Thursday, February the 13th. Meeting time is 7 p.m. Online virtual meeting via Zoom. Website is nyacc.org. Long Island Macintosh Users Group meets Friday, February the 14th, Valentine's Day. Meeting time is 7 p.m., online virtual meeting via Zoom, and their website is limac.org. Our website is pcradioshow.org. We are heard each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on PRN, live streaming on the Internet. Podcast of the program is available on prn.live on the Internet. If you have any questions for us, just send us an email addressed to hank@pcradioshow.org. In the meantime, stay in touch and remember to do regular backups. I'm Hank Key, and on behalf of Michael Horowitz, Benjamin Rockwell, and Marty Winston, we thank you for listening. Stay safe and healthy until we meet again, same time, same station next week.